Well, Ezekiel 16, what are we to make of such a lurid kind of chapter full of menstrual blood, naked young woman, talk about breasts, talking about rape, talking about prostitution. It's all pretty graphic kind of language. It's graphic even for us who are bombarded by pornography, by sexual innuendo, etc. all the time. And yet, even more so, in those days, this would have been really quite shocking. And, of course, it was intentionally so. Verse 2, this is to make Jerusalem know her abominations. One of the problems Ezekiel was up against in his ministry was that, as he says several times, they treated sin as a light thing. They did not see it as particularly significant. They were sure that we are the people of God, we are Judah, we are Israel, we are the followers of Yahweh. We are not atheists, we believe in Yahweh. And they had their temple, even though at this point it was about to be destroyed. They were sure that their culture meant that they were God's people, and yet they failed to see that actually they had a light-hearted attitude to their relationship with God and were really committing prostitution. And I think that this is a particularly strong warning for those who were raised as believers, whose culture it was always to be believers, to be Christian, and one can therefore forget the radical personal change that came into our lives when we accepted Jesus Christ, as everybody must do, no matter how you were raised, as a Christian or as an atheist. You still have to accept Jesus Christ and to accept the radical change that his entry into your life has caused. You cannot be schooled into that position. So I think it is relevant for very many of us. And admittedly, it is pretty shocking. But the theme that he keeps harking on in this chapter is that you have not remembered the days of your youth. He says this several times. In other words, they just assumed that how things stand now between God and ourselves is how they have always stood. And so he talks in pretty strong language, really, about their very fragile beginnings. Don't forget, in chapter 20, he's going to tell us that when they left Egypt, they took with them the idols of Egypt. And as Stephen points out in Acts 7, quoting from Amos, they took the star of their god Remphan with them and the tabernacle of Moloch with them, along with the standards of the tribes, the stars of the tribes, and as well as the tabernacle of Yahweh. They were very spiritually weak, and yet God worked with them. So he says, verse 5, that Israel nationally were originally like an unwanted child that was cast out into the open desert. And we think of Hagar and Ishmael. He's telling them through that allusion that, you know, you were no better than Ishmael. He was also a seed of Abraham. You were no better. The seed was called in Isaac by grace alone. The Septuagint says about this sad baby, you were cast out on the face of the field because of the deformity of your person in the day in which you were born. So the picture is of a deformed child that is thrown out to die into the open desert. Verse 6, when I passed by you and saw you wallowing or choking in your blood, I said to you, though you are in your blood, live. Yes, I said to you, though you are in your blood, live. So this newborn deformed child that has been thrown out into the desert to die was wallowing or choking in its own birth blood. It was about to die. And God had mercy, as nobody else would, and saved it. And God said to that child, live. He emphasizes this twice. I said to you, live. Now, that is exactly what is going to later be said to the dry bones, in the vision of dry bones later on in Ezekiel. Can these dry bones live? No, they can't. Yes, they can, if I breathe my spirit into them. And, of course, in the end, that new covenant, the offer of the Spirit under the new covenant that was being offered to Judah at the time was spurned, and yet is reapplied to us. So again, we are no better. We are as the rejected, deformed child thrown out into the open desert to die, choking on their own birth blood. The child is typically born covered in blood, and this child had not even been washed, was thrown out, and was choking on its own birth blood. It's an incredible picture that nobody was interested apart from God, who said, live. It's, again, Ezekiel 15. He says, imagine the branch of a vine tree. A branch of a vine tree is not very strong, not very stable, it's pretty brittle at the best of times, but imagine when it's burnt, when it's charred. Is that any good for anything? No, it isn't, but I will use you. And so we're being told that this happened to us because all this is applied to the dry bones. God says, live, and they live through the Spirit. So then, God then says that he took this deformed young child and made it live, and we're told that as she grew up, her time came for the time of love. And verse 11, I beautified you with ornaments. She needed to be beautified. She was a deformed child who'd been abandoned. And God had looked after her and adopted her, and he therefore beautified her. And the language that is used, talking about the various clothes that were put on her that gave her glory and beauty, you think of the language of the high priestly clothes for glory and for beauty. And a lot of the things that are mentioned here that she was decked with, and her clothing of fine linen and embroidered work, fine flour, honey and oil, seal skins, jewels, a crown on the head, a lot of all this is the attire of the priests, according to the law of Moses. So, this is what God gave her. And he says, verse 8, I spread my skirt over you and covered your nakedness. I swore to you and entered into a covenant with you. And you became mine. Now, this is the language of marriage. We remember how Boaz, as it were, spread his garment over Ruth as a sign of betrothal and a sign of care. So, Ezekiel is saying what Jeremiah does, that God fell in love with Israel in the wilderness and gave them his covenant. He was attracted to them, it seems, so easily. And there you've got a takeaway. God is attracted to us so easily. It's not as if we have to make ourselves so pretty and so good for him. He is very attracted to us. And I think this is why he gets understandably angry. Because such a level of love, if it's spurned, as this woman spurned it by becoming a prostitute, becoming sexually addicted, not just doing it for money, but actually paying men to sleep with her, as the chapter goes on to say, of course, the wrath of God is the love of God. It's certainly related, because his extent of love means that love spurned by the beloved and love abused is naturally going to elicit anger from him. And great anger, because his love is so great. Now, as I say, the point of all this is, you don't remember this, do you, Judah? You have not remembered the days of your youth. This is repeated several times. And I think the idea comes through to us that we can assume that how we are now with God is how we always were, and that was not the case. There is light and darkness. There is such a thing as the lost being found. And as I say, whether or not you were mollycoddled from your mother's womb almost into Sunday school attendance, church attendance, coming to meetings, etc., all the same, your acceptance of Jesus in baptism into him was a radical act. At least it was from God's side. You passed from darkness to light. Now, for those who, as I say, were raised believers, this is sometimes hard to perceive. And I think that that is why those folks often go through hell and high water, basically. They often have a very difficult life in some ways because God sort of needs to compensate for that, as it were. He needs to help them to see the radical nature of their decision for Jesus Christ, that this was coming from darkness to light. Even if you were raised in the church, you still came on a personal spiritual basis from darkness to light. You were lost and you were found. You were the lost coin. You were the lost sheep. You were the prodigal. And you were found and were accepted by his grace. Now, you think also of a similar teaching in 2 Peter 1 verse 9, where Peter says, "He that lacks these things is blind, seeing only what is near, having forgotten the cleansing from his old sins." So you can be spiritually blind by just, or short-sighted, is in fact the word he's using in Greek there, in just looking at what's in front of you right now, short-sighted. You're just seeing your life with God now, and you're assuming that's how it always was, and you're forgetting where you came from. Now, we need some pretty strong advice about this, and we need to be spoken to sternly about this. And that's why, in verse 2 of Ezekiel 16, you've got this whole thing about, "I'm going to cause you to know your abominations. I want you to see. I want you to remember where you came from." Because you can forget that. You can, as I say, just assume that you've always sort of been with God at the level that you are right now. The more you realize that you were in Egypt, and your baptism was an exit from slavery. It was an exit from a prison camp. And you passed through the Red Sea, you came into the desert, and now you're being led towards God's kingdom. Right, well then you see the huge cosmic difference that there is between the believer and the world. But if you forget that, or if at the time there was not that cosmic difference, because you didn't perceive the greatness of his salvation, because you assumed that being sort of a Sunday school kid and being a church member sort of was your salvation, as it were, well, you therefore won't see the wonder of it all. You won't be so motivated to go out to other folks and say, "Look, join me, make that break." All the metaphors of coming from darkness to light, the lost being found, the slaves being let out of prison, the blind being given their sight, etc. All those metaphors lose something, lose a lot, if in fact you can't remember, you don't perceive the greatness of that change and that action of God in your life. But as you come to see it, and God will lead you there if you wish to be led there, then you will thereby be the more motivated to be separate from the world, to not be in the spirit of this world, because you will see the change that there is, the cosmic difference that there is. And also you will the more earnestly want to reach out to those who are still in darkness, those who are still in the prisons of whatever, to get out of there and to experience the life that by grace you do.